Good afternoon. You're listening to Curated, a weekly roundup of the who's who and the what's what in the arts and culture scene here in the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio's arts and culture reporter. Each week, we bring you conversations and stories about notable happenings in our little slice of the world. Today on Curated, actor Joe Saw speaks about his breakout role.
He didn't want to contrast like the turmoil, the differences between what is considered to be a completely masculine man to someone who's masculine but also queer.
We profile art-based executive director Jenna Mo.
I saw it and thought, if I apply, there's a really good chance I'm gonna get this job. Do I want to apply? Because I knew that I wanted it, but I knew it was a big job. So I was like, I better think about this first.
We hear from author Deborah Spark and another year of one of Aspen's longest sporting traditions finished over the weekend.
It's a big challenge, yeah. Especially if they drink too much beer, which occasionally rugby players are known to drink beer. So I think a lot of people took it easy last night in preparation for today so they would acclimatize a little better.
All of that, plus our song of the weekend is always The Week in the Arts, a quick rundown of the top things to see, hear, and experience this week in the Valley. That's all coming up on Curated from Aspen Public Radio News.
Yesterday was your birthday. Happy birthday.
Joe Saw plays the character of David in the film Spa Night. He's a first-generation Korean-American living in California with his conservative parents. His mother and father want him to settle down with a Korean girl, but there's one big reason that won't happen. He's gay. The film, directed by Andrew Ahn, is being screened at Aspen Films Film Fest this week, and I spoke with Saw about the film and its status as a breakout role for him. Through the course of the film, the character you play, David, is very quiet. He doesn't really say a whole lot. And I want to know what kind of challenges that poses to you as an actor.
Well, I guess it's kind of taking one part of your arsenal away. I guess if you were, a soldier or... It's just... Andrew really wanted this character to just be really memorable in that way, because he didn't want to contrast like the turmoil, the differences between like what is considered to be a completely masculine man to someone who's masculine but also queer. That was one of the bigger challenges, because I always wanted to do a little bit more. So we did always have conversations, like after a few takes, I would always ask, hey Andrew, is there something that, should I do it like this? should I actually throw something now? Or, could I actually raise my voice now? And he's all like, just wait. it's not the time.
So, Joe, I'd like to play a clip from the movie and then follow up with you after that. In this scene, it's the character David with his parents, and they start out by talking about him when he's going to marry a nice Korean girl, and he doesn't necessarily buy into that. So let's play this clip.
Where am I with Paul? Where?
Yeah, what if she thinks it's gross?
그로스? 야, 뭐가 그로스야?
응? 장가는 무슨 갈래면 아직도 멀었는데.
연애할라 했는데 됐잖아.
So for a little more context there too, what they're talking about is with this white girl, would she be willing to scrub the mother's back in the spa? And this scene is really a perfect example of something that I noticed over and over in the movie. And it's that when David disagrees or has something that's really, that's supposed to be pointed out is different about David. He says something in English to his parents, as opposed to responding in Korean. And I wonder what you think about that choice or if that affected the way you played David.
Well, as an Asian American, when you are, there's some stuff that is a lot more meaningful in that respective language, whether it be the word gross or like just calling mom and dad like by like the Korean word of mom and dad. It's a little bit more meaningful. And especially as an Asian American, we do interchangeably use, we just go back and forth. Like, I guess you could call it a term, like a way of code switching. As an actor, like, I wanted to make it somewhat as authentic as possible.
How does the relationship between David and his parents compare to the relationship between you and your parents?
It's somewhat similar. It's I felt like it was like a rated G version of my parents. I guess that's the best way to put it. With my parents, it was a lot different because, yeah, it was just, there's a lot more, like, I guess, nastier times. I don't think David could have handled my parents.
This movie felt like a very authentic portrayal of what the immigrant experience is and what the first generation American experience is. Do you feel like that's becoming more common, or is that a rarity, do you think? Like in an American film, I think that was something that I thought was really interesting.
Yes. I mean, yeah, for an American film, I'm glad you said that this was as American as an American film. And it is, because this story, like, of these immigrants who are in America is something that is so true, you know, and it's not always pretty. And the way Hollywood portrays a lot of immigrant families, that it's pretty, or, you know, there isn't too many, like, I guess, dire moments. And from what I experienced and from what all my other friends experience, that's not true. That's not the case. It's not pretty. And but it is pretty, like, I guess the ugliness, the struggle, the despair, I see it as pretty because it's something that you always have to overcome. And especially living in a new country, a new place where one wants to excel and succeed, it comes in the with the territory and of like a foreign territory. And for me, I think that's such a beautiful thing, that struggle, that that just drive to overcome these hurts, these failures, these times where you feel as if you can't go any longer. I think, in a sense, that's beautiful.
And this role of David in the film Spa Night, it's kind of a breakout role for you. You won an award for your performance at Sundance Film Festival. What's that been like for you?
I don't know. I can't put it in words. I guess, like, this whole Sundance thing, Alfest, it was just, yeah, I did not expect it. I didn't even dream about it. I couldn't dream about it. Just even this film being presented in America was just, yeah, I was just taken aback. And to me, that's just so amazing. Yeah, it's just a testament to, like, the crazy producers that actually, you know, funded this film. Like how do you take a chance on a story like this and allow it to get to, you know, where it has been? Like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, words can't describe it. But afterwards, it's kind of like, I see this, the trails of, like, I guess the award aftermath was probably, like, you know, just having more general meetings and as an actor, that's something that I've never knew about or thought it could happen. And just the whole fact that this Asian American film is being made in America is just, to me, is like a dream come true. And it's something that I really wanted to see happen. And hopefully there's more films like this that'll be produced, you know?
Joe Sa, who plays David in the film Spa Night, that's being screened during Aspen Films Film Fest this week. Thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Patrick. It was great talking to you.
The Art Base, formerly known as the Wiley Art Center, turned 20 this year, and just a year ago, Jenna Mo became its new executive director. I profiled her ahead of the nonprofit's main fundraising event last weekend. Jenna Mo grew up in Berkeley, California. She went to the University of Washington to study art, and there she had an internship at the school's medical center.
We would match works of art to different departments of the hospital based on research about art as healing and color therapy and like how you could change someone's experience or their stay based on the visuals around them.
She realized how art can affect and change lives. And during her summers, she'd work in California with kids' art programs. Then she met a guy who would later become her husband.
He wanted to live in Aspen and ski. He'd lived here before. And I was trying to get a job in the arts and no one was hiring.
But despite this move happening in 2008, right at the start of the economic crisis, she managed to get an interview at the Aspen Art Museum.
I moved out for the interview.
No job, no guarantee, just an interview. Luckily enough, she got it. And for a few years, she ran all sorts of education programs at the museum. The next stop was the Wheeler Opera House.
I had been working in Aspen for the last 8 years and loved it, learned a ton. But in many ways, the places I worked were pretty established.
Places with clout and large appeal. She wanted to get back to her roots in the visual arts. And one day, she saw a posting for a job as the executive director of the Wiley Arts Center.
I saw it and thought, if I apply, there's a really good chance I'm going to get this job. Do I want to apply? Because I knew that I wanted it, but I knew it was a big job. So I was like, I better think about this first.
And after two interviews,
I like put my phone in my purse and went to work and I missed the call. Like it got to the end of the day and I was like, maybe I didn't get it. Maybe they're not going to offer it to me. And I looked at my phone and I had a missed call and a message from like 15 minutes after the interview with a job offer. And I was like, I missed it. Like, how did that happen?
That was last summer. And now, almost a year to the date after her first day, she's done some big things, including overseeing a name change from the Wiley Art Center to the Art Base and helping to balance the budget. Mo says at one point, they only had 2 months of cash left in the bank.
I'm really proud of the whole team, the board, the staff, and everything that we've been able to do.
And at 29, she's got plenty of things left to do at the Art Base. This week's guest for First Draft is Deborah Spark, author of the novel Unknown Caller. The novel tells the story of a marriage that falls apart after only 5 months, and it's told from both sides of that failing relationship. Spark told host Mitzi Rapkin over Skype about the reason for starting the book.
I was thinking about how people, once they're married and then divorced, hate each other so much. And I was thinking in particular actually of three really crazy marriages that I knew. And one in particular was nuts, where the ex-wife was calling in the middle of the night, like my character, sort of screaming at her ex-husband, demanding money, doing really, really crazy things. And then the other marriage I was thinking of actually was a close relative whose marriage ended after a handful of months. And that was completely surprising to him, most of all. And then another story I heard of a marriage that ended really briefly. So I was curious about how one can go into something as serious as marriage and then quickly realize it's the wrong thing, and quickly end up at a point of incredible hate after presumably a point of incredible love. So that's what I was thinking about.
Taken from this idea that you saw crazy marriages around you, how did that then translate into this marriage and this novel?
When I look at people and they're on the tail end of a dark marriage, I always wonder what came before, sort of step by step. So I like the idea of going backward in time to figure out what happened, because it seems the story behind a breakup is so interesting. I mean, the story of how people got together too is interesting. So I thought I could start with the story of the breakup and go to the story of the get together, which is the case in this book. But the characters end up driving the drama pretty much because they're so particular and want in some ways such different things out of their marriage and out of their lives.
So the initial premise of the novel is you have these people that were married. You have Joel and Liesl, who met on vacation and then married and lived in Maine. And their marriage was only lasted 5 months, although they were together for a while before they got married. Not a significant amount of time. And she left him. And her view was that he was just a terrible, mean person. And he was just offended that she got up and left one day. So I feel like what the whole novel is saying is, in a way, is can you ever know someone? Are you asking also, though, that people are different to depending on who is in their life? So Liesl was different to Joel as she was to her daughter.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking about identity throughout the book. And it's funny because a friend of mine who has read all my books, she said, that's always an issue in your work. And I'm like, it is. But then I went back and I thought about my books and I thought, yeah, that is always an issue. And I don't know if that's because I'm a twin, but I've always been interested in the fact that if you see people at certain moments of their life, you would read them one way. And if you saw them another way, you would read them and judge their character in an entirely different way. You know, if you're having a screaming fight with your husband, you know, you look like a crazy loon. If you're teaching college and you're being nice to your students, you look like another way. If you're holding a baby, you know, you just look different at different parts of your life. But you obviously are a coherent whole. So I think Liesl very much, you know, has problems with her husband. I think her husband is baffled by the fact that she left and has baffled by her view of him. It would never occur to him that she felt as she did, just because his own personality, when he's brusque, he's just brusque. He's not understanding how she's registering it.
So your novel has so many backdrops. You have Maine, you have London, you have Paris, you have Copenhagen. And I saw in the back of the book that you got to visit many of these places. When you started this book, did you know it was going to be so geographically diverse? And then how did you end up, you know, handling the research for that?
Well, I am very lucky in that the school where I teach, Colby College, they have these grants, these $3,000 grants for travel and research. So if you apply for one, you pretty much can get it. And so I did very purposely set this in a lot of different places because I wanted to go there. And what I think is a funny story is the last story, is the Copenhagen story, which was the book was going to end in Lithuania. I was supposed to go to Lithuania to teach. And it was very important to me that the novel not end in America. I wanted it to end somewhere in Europe. And then the Lithuanian thing fell through. And I was like, oh, no, what am I going to do? Because I don't have enough money to send myself to Europe or to pay for a trip myself. So I said to my son, where do you want to go? And he said, Iceland. I said, oh, I don't want to go to Iceland, but I've always wanted to go to like Norway or Sweden or Denmark or something like that. And then I thought sort of very abruptly, because the deadline was only a week away for the grant, what if I make my characters young filmmakers in Denmark? That would be fun. That would, you know, that sort of popped into my head. And then I actually called or emailed the film commissioners of several different countries, you know, sort of to ask about coming and meeting people. And the one who got back, who was most generous and was going to set me up with a ton of filmmakers and introduce me to people, was this man named Ulrik Jorgensen. And so that's why we went to Copenhagen. He was amazing.
That was author Deborah Spark. She spoke about her book, Unknown Caller, with First Draft host Mitzi Rapkin over Skype. To hear their entire conversation, go online to aspenpublicradio.org. What is it? I don't know. Before the holes, check for calls. Lick your eyes, won't forget. Just know. Ruggerfest finished its 49th year this weekend. Teams traveled from around the country to compete in a rugby tournament featuring many age groups and skill levels. There was one challenge that faced all teams, though, and even if players came from Denver, they still didn't quite have home field advantage.
That's halftime, 20-minute halves in the over 45 division.
Two teams, one from Kansas City, one from Virginia, are halfway through their match on Thursday morning. The teams gather on the sidelines to talk about what went right and what went wrong. But there's more to deal with than the other team. Aaron Britt is a player on the sidelines taking it all in.
Better known as AB Love for the Misfits rugby football team.
It's a team based out of Denver. Britt played wide receiver on his college football team. He didn't get much playing time, so the invite he received from a friend to play rugby one day, he took very seriously. And soon enough, he became a regular player. But even though he lives in Denver, the Mile High City, he doesn't exactly have home field advantage here in Aspen.
Altitude makes a big difference. And the good thing about this tournament is rolling subs, so you get tired, you get to come out. If you had to go out there for a full game, it would definitely take a toll on you if you're not fit.
Britt, who's 46, plays in the over 45 and over 35 age groups. With his athletic background, he's able to keep up a little bit better. But for members of more, should we say, veteran teams, the altitude change can be a bit more daunting. Mark Keller is waiting for his game to start, and he knows all about how the thin air in Aspen will get your heart racing. He's a cardiologist.
It's a big challenge, yeah, especially if they drink too much beer, which occasionally rugby players are known to drink beer. So I think a lot of people took it easy last night in preparation for today, so they would acclimatize a little better.
Although Keller lives in Denver now, the rest of his teammates are from all over the country. Virginia, New Mexico,
Florida, Maine.
Keller's club, the Virginia Cardinals, meets up to compete in tournaments and to celebrate the real reason they still play this sport.
It's a boys' weekend for me. Get up here, hang out with the guys. Been doing this since 2002 with pretty much the same group. And they keep adding older age groups so we can keep playing as we age. I would just say like a final wine, but if you watch it, it's not as pretty as the younger guys.
Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio News. Good afternoon. This is Curated. Fall is my favorite season by far, and I have so many fond memories of driving through all the beautiful leaves in my home state of Pennsylvania, listening to this band for the song of the week. This is Copeland performing their song, The Last Time He Saw Dory. Thank you.
loved me and so loved me, cause I didn't want to stay. I didn't want to stay.
That was Copeland singing their song, The Last Time He Saw Dory. It's Monday, September 19th, and this is The Week in the Arts, an abbreviated list of the upcoming events and happenings in the Valley. Aspen Films Film Fest starts on Wednesday. The festival runs through the weekend and screens movies in Carbondale and Aspen. The classic film Mr. Mom is being shown at the Basalt Regional Library on Wednesday. March 4th, Marching Band plays at the Belly Up on Thursday. Valley Comedy All-Stars perform at Loyal Brothers Lounge in Glenwood Springs on Friday. Pop and folk singer Brett Denon plays at the Belly Up on Friday, and the Wailers play on Saturday. For more on arts and culture or to submit your event, go online to aspenpublicradio.org. This is Curated, a weekly show dedicated to arts and culture. I'm Patrick Fort at the Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk. Curated is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.